Ladies and gentlemen, the Football Scoop podcast is back. Those of you who are watching on YouTube might notice Doug Samuel's not with us. He's still gallivanting around Disney. God bless the man. He's going to run out of money at some point. He'll have to come back. That's all we know. All right, I got Zach Barnett, John Bryce. Gentlemen, it's great to see you guys. How's everybody?
Very good, very good.
I'm in shorts. It's a big deal. God bless America. I'm getting rid of this vest soon. It's Mardi Gras time. I'm going to be in New Orleans this weekend. It's going to be fantastic. But that's not why we're here today, gentlemen. We're here to talk a little bit about college football. Things are happening. Recruiting is kind of winding down. The portal is still out there. Revenue share is coming down. House settlement meetings this month. Potentially a ruling a month from now, a month and a week or so. And it impacts recruiting and it impacts roster limits. And all of the above, and payouts to current players and future players. Johnny Bryce, give me a lay of the land. How's this impacting recruiting and other things? The ball is yours.
I appreciate that. As much as I think that we would like to believe everyone is riveted by our podcast, I think with your upcoming weekend in Mardi Gras, that a Football Scoop Mardi Gras podcast on Monday might do bigger numbers. If we might be better off to hear about tales of lore from you, sir, gallivanting and crusading around the French Quarter, along with all the other shenanigans you shall see. But
I will be gallivanting and crusading across the French Quarter on Friday. For anyone who's going to be in New Orleans this Friday, mid-afternoon, I will be gallivanting through the French Quarter.
Another tuxedo and tails coming up for one of these galas?
No, this is definitely not that. This is in preparation for Le Coup d'Etat Friday night.
Well, while you're reinvigorating your youth this weekend in Mardi Gras, speaking of youth, I think it's a pertinent time for us to host a pod, specifically kind of looking at how the transfer portal, impending revenue share, and all of those items continue to impact high school recruiting and high school, how many players are signing. And I know we've all heard from a number of people, this would be a great pod to actually have Doug on, because he has the very unique perspective of being a high school head coach who has some players now being recruited, including to the FBS level. And he also has coaches coming through his school now telling him, we want to recruit your kids, but, just like every other school, we're also going to look at the portal. And speaking of the portal, I think this might paint the most stark picture as we go through this podcast. In 2020, there were a couple of thousand, depending on what you look at, there were between like 2 and 3,500 kids who entered the NCAA transfer portal from a football perspective to try and change their location and switch things around. And we'll look at numbers of transfers signed coming up over the course of this pod as well. This recent transfer portal window that just closed last month, we're still in the tail end of February, so we can still say last month. It closed late December. The numbers came out in early January. More than 11,000 players entered the transfer portal just for NCAA football in this cycle. More than 11,000. So you think about how many teams that is, how many players that is, how widespread that is. Of course, that's all NCAA players that entered the transfer portal. So that's not just FBS players, but more than 11,000 players entered the portal. It's a crisis in football in America right now, and it's specifically a crisis at the high school level.
So 5 years ago, it was about 3,000, and this year it was about 11?
Yes.
Whew. Yeah, okay, that's significant.
Yeah, and I mean, you've shared some stuff that you've heard from high school coaches. I know I just actually – talked to Zach Mettenberger last week, who just took over the job at Father Ryan High School in Nashville. He obviously had a unique college path because he started at Georgia, spent a year at JUCO, finished up his career doing really well for LSU, and played several seasons in the NFL, most notably with the Titans. And he talked about wanting to see his kids get recruited again and just how different it is and how many kids are being left behind. What I think is ultimately – going to happen for this. And I had some coaches agree to it. I talked specifically with Clay Hendricks from Furman a couple of weeks ago. And I said, well, do you think that all these high school kids, at least being left behind right now, are at the FBS level, have a chance to sign then FCS, and FCS will get a boost for it? And he agreed that he thinks there will be a boost and has been a bit of an uptick in FCS signees and FCS getting some players that they otherwise couldn't have gotten. The flip side of that is I talked to the parent of a player right now in the MAC yesterday, told me, John, there's not a chance in hell that my son would get a scholarship to a very solid MAC program right now like he did 5 years ago coming out of high school. And he said, to be honest with you, I don't know if he could get a D2 scholarship right now. He might have to go D3. That to me is maybe one of the most stark anecdotes we can share, one of the most stark hypotheticals that we can share, because that's not our words. That's the parent of a current NCAA student athlete who plays FBS football, who thinks because of the current system, and he's got some experience working in personnel and things like that, his kid would be completely left behind right now. And that's what we're hearing, how many kids are being left behind.
So, Zach, maybe you can help me with this. We got two, maybe there's more than that, but there's two clear issues happening. One is the total number of players, the FBS level is coming down, right, with this new cap. And second, now you have this massive influx of players in the portal. So high school is getting crushed here. High school is getting crushed here. There's nowhere for high school kids to go. And I'll give you a very real example. John, this is right along the lines of what you're talking about. I was talking with a friend whose son, freshman year, he redshirted as a freshman at a group of five school. He was a quarterback, and he's very good. And he played for a very good quarterback's coach. And that quarterback's coach told him at the end of his freshman year, which he redshirted, he said, look, realistically, your best chance to start, not this upcoming season, but the next season, you got to go somewhere and play. So go somewhere and play and come right back here. You could go to Michigan. You could go anywhere, right? But you got to get out there and play. So he bounced to FCS, and now he's going to bounce to another. We'll see. He said, colleges do not want to take, unless you're, you know, the top of the top, they don't want to take a high school quarterback to an FBS program where he's going to sit 2 or 3 years. They want you to play somewhere, and then they'll pay you. You know, they'll come get you, if that makes any sense. Zach, thoughts on all this, and how, as a high school kid, how do you navigate this?
Yeah, what I'm seeing and hearing, I see on my timeline multiple times a day, high school coaches blasting out the message of, you are not too good to field interest from an FCS Division II, Division III school. Because what we're seeing is a massive paradigm shift of, if I go play, if I ball out in high school, I'm going to get a Division I, which FBS scholarship. I'm going to go to that school for 4 or 5 years, play, and then move on with my life. That path has largely been disrupted. And so you're having coaches having to educate players, having to educate families that, yeah, you are really good. You're good enough to play college football, but college football is bigger than FBS. And the path for you to end your career at the FBS level might start in Division II or FCS if you're lucky. And those schools have opportunities for you. And if you want to play, you might have to start there. And John, I'm interested to hear the numbers that you have for us here in a second, but I'm very interested to see, I hope someone out there has the number of players who play college football and from Division III on up, who earn a degree from the school that they sign with out of high school. I would guess that number, 20%, 10%, something like that.
In that realm, yeah.
Probably highest at the Division III level. You're going to have your higher number of guys that start there and stay there. And then you have your absolute physical freaks, guys that go to the Power Four level and stay there because they're more athletic than everyone else. And then you have a gigantic, 80% in the middle of guys who move up throughout their careers, move down, and ultimately find their fit. It's to the point now where you're having to educate these families of, when you sign that paper in your facility at high school, that's not the end of your destination. That's the beginning of a new destination that's going to take you probably to multiple years, multiple schools throughout the years. And I'd love to see these transcripts and what these guys look like 4 or 5 years from now.
And in this research, Zach, you make up a great point, and I don't have more recent numbers, but as I was poring over some of these numbers, in 2012, I saw data that indicated the graduation rate of players getting NCAA FBS scholarships overall was around the nationwide average was like 81%. And so obviously, you know, that number has to have been dramatically impacted by all this because in the process of opening the transfer portal and doing some of these things, then the APR rate is still a thing. The academic progress rate that was supposed to be tied to a team's postseason eligibility. But now there are more exceptions to it. There are more creative ways to get around it. They've had to change the way the NCAA and the partner institutions have had to change the way that the APR is computed. And then I think maybe the most important factor when you examine how many high school kids are potentially being left behind right now versus not is that let's remember in 2022, and we were all working together by then, that's when the NCAA changed the rule that capped a signing class at 25 and said, no, you can sign as many as you want to. You just can't have more than 85 scholarship players when you open camp in the fall to begin practice. So even – and that rule had been pretty hard capped because of what Ole Miss had done back in the day. I can't remember if that was Houston Nutt or – I think it was Houston Nutt when he came in and famously signed 38 guys when everybody else was operating on 25-man signing classes. But anyway – in 2022, they lifted the cap from 25 and said, you can sign as many as you want. You just cannot go over an 85-person scholarship roster when you open preseason camp in late July or August. And so with that backdrop, as I've looked at more than, I think, approximately 14 teams here, including almost the entire 2024-12-team college football playoff field, Ohio State had a 26-man signing class of high school signees in 2020 because you could gray shirt or get creative. You were allowed to have up to about 2 to 3 guys above that if you were gray shirting or blue shirting a kid. But since that time, and Georgia this past year, this 25 class has signed 27 high school kids and taken just 6 transfers. But that is completely opposite of so many places. Like, let's look at Purdue. Purdue in 2020 signed 23 high school kids. In this 2025 class, the first for Barry Odom as they rebuild, they only signed 12 high school kids. They got 29 transfers and 12 high school kids at a 4-year public school. So I think some of that data, as we continue to mine it, is just completely fascinating. But there's unequivocally high school kids being left behind because now schools can sign as many high school kids as they want, and you haven't had anybody sign really over that 25 number, and most in this time frame are anywhere from 2 to 8 below 25.
Well, you look at Ohio State and Georgia, they're choosing from a very select pool. They're choosing guys that if they keep their head on their shoulders and they keep their joints intact, they're going to play in the NFL. They're just that much level, much more physically gifted than everyone else. Then you have Purdue at probably the top end of the middle 80% of college football. If you're looking at Purdue, if you're a high school kid trying to sign with Purdue, not only do you have to compete for a scholarship with every other high school kid senior in your class, you have to compete with every other college football player. You have to compete with the rest of the Big Ten. You have to compete with the AAC, everyone else in FBS that they could potentially get as a transfer. You have to compete with FCS Division II players that are 3-4 years older than you. Your 17-year-old self is competing for scholarships with 20, 21-year-olds. And potentially, there's multiple court cases going that, thanks to Diego Pavia. Now we're trying to get it ruled to where, unless you're playing FBS, your years don't count. So you can play 4 years. At a 2 years at JUCO, 4 years at Division II, be 24 years old, and then you're competing with a 17-year-old high school kid for a scholarship at Purdue.
Yeah, it's utter madness. And you bring up a great point from a conversation I had literally this week with the college football general manager, and he was like, look, we're going to need another quarterback. And we could have signed a guy this year at the high school ranks, but we're waiting to see what's in the portal. We evaluated the portal now. We didn't get our top choice. We're going to see what's in the portal in April. And let's remember, we had a condensed 25-day opening in December, and then we have a 10-day opening upcoming in April. That's a bit of a change. It's I guess it was a 20-day span in December because it went from 45 days of total portal windows to 30 days this year, with 20 in December and 10 in April from April 16th through the 25th. But they're going to wait then because they're a program that frankly has to show win improvement on the field this fall. They don't have the luxury of taking a guy, even though they had a guy that they specifically said they loved at the high school level, but they said that we absolutely have to be able to win right now, and we have to have a chance to get a guy who's already been in a college program 2 years, so that he's more developed, so that he's more ready to help us do what we have to do, we feel the pressure to do on the field in the fall. Arkansas is another one while you guys talk that I'm looking up. I'm curious to look up here. Texas A&M, I think, is a really good example because in 2020, A&M had one of the top classes in America, and they signed 26 prep kids, and they took one kid out of the transfer portal. And this year, A&M has signed 24 prep kids. Good for them. But they're taking 14 out of the transfer portal.
I don't know what the right answer to this is, but if you had a son who was, you know, high school junior, high school senior, and he's not being recruited by Georgia, Texas, Alabama. You know, he's being recruited by some quality group of five teams, some FCS teams. What are you advising him right now? I mean, you're not a year one starter anywhere, right? You're going to be a good kid when you're 20, but you're 17 right now. What are you telling him is the right path, is the best path?
I think you want, I mean, the way the landscape is to me, I'm telling him, son, here's the examples of Zach just had a great one. Diego Pavia, his journey. And now look at him. He's getting a year back in the SEC because he's fought the system. And he'll probably be a preseason All-SEC selection. Will he be the first team All-SEC pick for 25? I don't know. There's certainly some others that will end up in that conversation. Arch Manning and Nico Iamaliava among them. You're welcome, Scott. But Diego Pavia is going to absolutely get preseason SEC consideration. And look where his path began. So I'm telling a kid, let's look at D2, and that's what, or let's look at FCS. Let's find the best fit. And point blank, I talked to Jared Parker earlier this month and visited with him at the AFCA convention last month in Charlotte. And I found this enlightening because we had that story where we embedded with Jared and his staff at Troy last spring during their camp, did everything, staff meetings, set in on recruiting meetings with them. And they lived the message that they were saying at the time. And I thought this will be interesting to see if this happens, because it's easy for coaches at G5 or the FCS level to say right now, you come play for us, and if you prove yourself, I promise we'll help you go Power 5. And they specifically had that conversation. I heard them have that conversation with recruits and say, look, yeah, you're talking to Auburn, but we want you right now. You come here and ball out for 2 years, we promise we'll help you go to Auburn. Well, Troy had a 1,000-yard receiver this past season, and guess where that guy's going to play his 2025 football season, Scott? For James Franklin and the Penn State Nittany Lions. They lived their words.
Yeah,
and right. So if you have a relationship with coaches at a school and you believe in them when they say, you come play for us and we won't fight it, then – I think that can be the best path for these kids, because they're still growing and developing more. Even if they don't win the starting job at that FCS program, if they're truly competing for it instead of being the fifth option at an FBS program and being disaffected and probably mentally checking out midway through the year and hearing how they need to go in the transfer portal, I think that's a better option.
I am hearing that.
You know, more John,
hang on one second. I've been hearing that more and more from FCS and from Group of Five coaches. We have to embrace exactly what you just said, John. We got to get them, play them as early as possible, prove them. And then if they get taken, they get taken, you know, but we'll keep doing it. We'll bring in young talent and we'll be a talent farm. And we're going to embrace that because that's who we are right now. Because we don't have $20 million, you know, to pay like Georgia does. Sorry, Zach.
No, that leads into my thought of when we were talking about this, a thought that I had was, how do you build trust between coach and player when, you know, you go to the convention and you're shaking your hand and at the same time you're shaking somebody's hand, you see them looking over your shoulder, looking over your right shoulder. Who's a better person that I can go have a conversation with than this spare that I'm talking to right now? How do you build trust between coach and player when you know the player's probably looking for a better option if he has a good season? Coach is looking for a better option if he doesn't have a good season, or if he does. If you're constantly just trying to one-up and go play, get a better option, wherever that is. And I think what you guys have mentioned of – I think that's the only way you can play it. Of if we're at FCS school, we know you want to be at the FBS level. Come play for us. We'll help you do that rather than – you come here and we'll work for our own interest and try and hold on to you selfishly. We'll help you go fulfill your dreams. And to answer your earlier question, Scott, you know, if my son is a, you know, group of five FCS type kid, what I'm telling him is the odds of you playing in the NFL are not impossible, but very low. And the odds of you, if you get to the NFL, the odds of you making enough money playing football to live on for the rest of your life are shocking, microscopic. And so you're going to need to find a way to make a living other than football sooner than you think. So I'm thinking you've got to choose. This is, seems like a teacher's pet answer given what we do for a living. But having said that, your options are you got to go to a school where the coach, where you believe in the coaching staff, the coaches believe in you. And these are guys that are going to help fulfill you and develop you as a player and as a human being. And you've got to go to a school where you would like to live and attend there if you weren't playing football. Those are the only answers. Mm-hmm. You can't pick a school because they're going to pay you $20,000 more than a place where you really want to be. That's the most penny-wise, pound-foolish decision you could possibly make.
Now, here is one thing I'm seeing at the high school level, and you all have already done a great job of noting this, that like if you're being recruited, if you're that five-star cat who's being recruited by Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, Texas A&M, et cetera, how hard do you try to early enroll because of the rules of NIL, particularly as some states still aren't allowing NIL at the high school level, but it's a completely wide-open marketplace at the collegiate level. So we've already seen it. We've already seen a high school kid who's supposed to be in the class of 2026 reclassified to 2025. He's now been on a college campus for about 6 weeks when he should be 6 weeks into the second half of his junior year of high school. And now he's 6 weeks into his collegiate career because he was a consensus top 100 prospect who was getting six figures immediately upon arriving in college and has a chance to continue to earn that. The flip side of that is FCS can still be a pathway to a great payday at the collegiate level, even if you spend 4 years of your career at the FCS level. And I've got two examples here. I know that there was an FCS defensive lineman who has gone from the FCS to Power Five during this portal cycle, who's getting approximately $600,000 to $750,000 guaranteed to play his final year of college football at a Power Five school. I know there's another guy. We always think all the money is around quarterbacks or primarily around quarterbacks. There's another guy who is an offensive lineman who's stepping up in level of play and will spend his final year of college at the Power Conference level, who's going to get more than $1 million guaranteed. I repeat, more than when $1 million guaranteed. And I don't believe he's even projected to be the left tackle. He will be a starting tackle, but he's not the projected left tackle, and he will make more than $1 million.
Yeah, offensive defensive line are killing it right now. Okay, Zach, so you got an article this morning on Football Scoop. It's basically about Georgia's revenue breakdown. So Georgia, just like most other schools, have announced their plan, and they say, hey, We got $20.5 million we're going to distribute to the players, assuming the house settlement goes through and all that stuff, starting July 1st, when the new fiscal year starts for colleges. We got 105 players, $13.5 million for football. So that's like $130,000 on average for those 105 players, right? Mm-hmm. But they're not going to do it on average. Most schools are not going to do it like that. Most schools are going to do like some sort of base for all 105, but then there's going to be tiers of, you know, your top quarterback, your top, you know, your rush edge, who's just winning games for you, your left tackle, right tackle, you know, those kind of difference makers, receivers who can stretch everything. How do you see, like, it's like this morning news is coming out. Oklahoma is hiring Jim Nagy. Jim Nagy's run the Senior Bowl the past couple of years. Jim was involved in NFL general manager type discussions. Jim's going to Oklahoma to be the general manager for Oklahoma football. And he's going to be the guy who's got to deal with these kids and their parents and say, hey, we got 70 grand for you, or we got 700 grand for you, you know, and trying to work these deals and then trying to retain them as the portal opens and you don't want guys to leave. Thoughts on all of the above, Zach?
I don't envy. I'm just trying to put myself in the place of the family. You're going to Oklahoma. You have an opportunity to play, or you're playing football. I have the opportunity to play at a blue blood program like Oklahoma, and then walking into that room with the general manager and reality smacking you in the face of, yeah, you're going to get paid, but here's what we view you're worth. And if you don't like it, you're welcome to leave. We have five other guys willing to fill your spot. I mean, college football is very much a business. And so a lot of kids are going to have to see the cold reality of business smack them in the face when they're not worth what they think they're worth.
It basically makes every player a one-year free agent, right? I mean, every year, hey, you know, we had you on $600,000. We're going to drop you down to $250,000. And he's like, well, I can get $400,000 somewhere else. I can get $500,000 somewhere else. See ya. I mean, I hate to say it.
I was with Rick Pitino this week. He spent 2 years coaching in Europe when he was on exile or whatever from college basketball. And he said it's the best 2 years he could have spent, because Europe, they run on two-year contracts, and European basketball are extremely rare. So most everyone's on a one-year deal. So he said it trained him for this professional league he's coaching in now, which is college basketball. And he also said that St. John's is not even looking at college or high school recruits for this coming class. Now, obviously, it's a different sport, but they're not even considering taking a single high school kid for this upcoming class.
Yeah, the contract element, the revenue share that you're talking about is really real. That's why we're continuing to see it. We just saw Notre Dame hire Mike Martin because he's got two decades experience in the NFL. Jim Nagy, as you noted, Florida's new GM, Florida's new GM, straight from the Atlanta Falcons, I believe Clemson also just added a former NFL guy. Story we just wrote about on Football Scoop today, Bobby Merritt to University of Nevada, has more than a decade of NFL experience, not in the front office, but scouting. He understands personnel. He knows, and coaches are telling guys that they're bringing in to these GM positions now, I need somebody in there who's objective, not subjective. We need somebody to just look at the roster and say, keep all these guys, let these guys walk, or tell them that they're coming back for basically no money or drastically reduced money. And that's going to be the next step in this already constantly evolving brand new reality that is college football, specifically as it pertains to recruiting and roster building.
And I hate to be high horse guy. I hate high horse guy, but I got to be high horse guy of – you're going to have the vast, vast, vast majority of these guys when they're 23 years old. They're done playing college football, or 27, 28 years old. They're done playing college football. They've got a pile of money that's great to start your life with, but not going to carry you for the rest of your life. And do they have any sort of degree? I realize college football has not been anything what we would describe as pure in 100 years, but the concept of education now is just completely out the window when you're switching schools 3-4 times in a 4 or 5 year period.
Yeah. They used to try and have the sport and the school, or the sport and the academics intertwined. And now at best, they're like adjacent. They coexist, but they're not intertwined.
So you're a power four, nice tight end, probably not going to make the league, but you're making, 130. You're making the average. You're getting 130 a year, maybe even more, maybe 200. And you're up, if you don't go to the NFL, which you don't think you are, you're selling insurance or you're doing something. And they're like, hey, I know my fourth year's up, but I think I'm going to play a fifth year. You're like, yeah, but you can't. He's like, no, I think I can. I don't think it's in. And all of a sudden, you're going to see Diego Pavia type stuff and like, hey, NCAA, stop me, And there's really no rules. There's no leadership. Come on, college football.
Well, and that's one of the rules, and I think Zach has maybe written about it or is versed in it as well. That's one of the proposals on the table is you get 5 years to play five, and that's it. That could potentially be your career. But to your point, Scott, a very common practice, and I know this definitively from speaking with college personnel and speaking with players and their families, a very common tactic that has popped up, especially in the last 2 to 3 seasons or 2 to 3 years, is that if a guy can play that fifth year or he's considering going into the draft, because remember, this is finally, we're just now getting all the extra COVID years off of rosters now moving forward. Like, seriously, we've still had 6 and 7 year players because they've redshirted and had a COVID year. So we're just now washing that off. But what they've done is schools have helped them get their draft grades or get their draft projections and said, okay, you're going to be a 4th to 7th round guy or maybe even an undrafted free agent. If you're the highest grade for a 4th round guy, or we talked to a dozen scouts and 10 of the 12 have you with a 4th round grade, here's what the value of signing a 4th round deal would be. We'll give you $400,000 to come back and play one more year with us because we think you're that good, and that's what your value would be. So bet on yourself. Get this guaranteed money and come back. That's happening a whole lot in college football. That's why, look, and they're not 5th and 6th year guys, but there's not a chance in hell that Drew Aller and Nick Singleton and Catron Allen are running it back this year at Penn State if NIL wasn't the current system in place at the college level.
Yes, agreed.
That's why I think the NFL should chip in here a little bit. The college football is their free minor league system. College football is delivering them. The numbers of early entrants was going up and up and up every single year, and the number of guys going completely undrafted was going up every year. That number is now leveled off and then dropped drastically. So college football is delivering them older, better players, and I think the NFL is one of the greediest organizations on earth, so this will never happen. But I think they should cut a check to college football as in, hey, you guys are developing our players for free. You're now, because of they can get paid, they're not coming. You're not delivering us as many 20-year-olds that really shouldn't be trying to play professional football, but they need to get paid. Here's a contribution that we can spread to every school equally or whatever as a thank you.
Well, and baseball, and you don't really give Major League Baseball credit for this because Major League Baseball gets far more wrong than it does right, even though I love that as a spectator sport. And that is, right now, college baseball is better than ever before. You know why? Because of NIL and because of the fact that these teams, especially the big boys like A&M and Texas and Tennessee and Clemson and Florida State, they're flying charter jets and they're making a hell of a lot more money as a college baseball player than they would be making in the minors once you take away the signing bonus equation. And a lot of those guys in the minor leagues don't get more than $15,000 to $30,000 as a signing bonus. Plus, then they're making it to the big leagues even sooner because every college facility that I just ticked off and dozens more for baseball are still nicer than almost all of the minor league baseball facilities. So we've seen, to your point, Zach, you're exactly right, early entries in the NFL draft have dropped in recent years because so many guys coming back, and college baseball is better than it's ever been because dudes are getting paid.
Good stuff, gentlemen.
I didn't think we'd go 35 minutes. Didn't think we could do it.
God bless America. Football Scoop. It's my favorite website. Y'all's favorite website?
Absolutely.
Agreed. Pretty easily. All right. On that note, we're out.